This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's The Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today we roll into one of your favorites. It's our potpourri episode where we hear from a few of you, the stackers. Let's hear about some of your big wins. Today, we'll talk about creating your own career, loaning your car through Turo, and brewing your own beer. Plus, as extreme weather becomes more common, homeowners insurance policies are getting trickier. What do you need to know? We'll share during our headline segment. And I'll save the day with some amazing trivia. And now, two guys who are proceeding with care and have made it halfway to Friday, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
And a happy Wednesday to you. We have made it without injury so far, OG.
Speak for yourself.
Halfway through the week.
Very tired.
Well, okay. I've made it. I got the coffee ready. You got your coffee out?
I do. Yes.
Yes. So we're going to power into this. Well, the good news is you and I don't have to do month. We don't have to do much today. Don't have to do month today either. You know why? Because today is, as Doug said, the potpourri episode. We're going to talk to a bunch of stackers about what they did. So you and I put, kind of putting our feet up after the headlines. We got a great show. We're going to talk about all kinds of aspects of the average day in the life of a stacker. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. All right, we got Sarah, Christopher, and Ryan waiting, so we got to get our headline done. Let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today is brought to you by, where's my head? What am I
told you
doing?
It's just,
Holy cow. I'm not sure.
You mailed it in early. You're like, I don't have to do anything today.
And done. Here's the cool thing. This piece is from, there we go, the New York Times. And it's written by Paul Sullivan. Paul, who's been on our show before. Paul writes, with extreme weather, home insurance will cost more if you can get it. You see this? Some of the problems people are having with their homeowners lately?
I did not see it. No. Nope.
Paul writes, wildfires in California and Oregon, hurricanes that wreak havoc from the Gulf Coast up to the Northeast, hail in the Midwest that's so big and falls with such intensity it punctures roofs. Extreme weather is causing billions of dollars in property damage with a greater frequency than even a few years ago. In response, insurance companies are increasingly rethinking which homes to cover and at what price. In some cases, they're raising premiums 2 to 5 times in a year. In others, they're denying coverage because they deem it too risky to have a lot of properties in an area that's prone to wildfires, like Los Angeles County. Have you ever been denied homeowners insurance?
I haven't been denied it, no, but
I was. I got kicked out.
We had 2 roof replacements in a span of about 18 months, and our housing insurance went up probably double. You said it was it in this article here that it went up 2 to 5 times. Do you mean 2 to 5X?
No.
Or no. They've raised it twice this
year?
Yes,
correct. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, they've raised it that many times. No, just incremental raises. We got kicked out when our homeowners company, we applied. We told them from the very beginning that we had a cedar shake roof. We had a wood roof on the house. And that flew for like 10 months. And at the 10-month mark, we got a letter that said, oh, we didn't realize you had a cedar shake roof, even though we said it, by the way, on the application. Hey, we can't insure you anymore. You've got, I don't remember how many days, I think it was 90 days. You got 90 days to find somebody else.
That's fun.
Yes.
I was talking to a insurance broker. Yeah, I got a letter in the mail that said, hey, I think I might be able to save you some money on your insurance. Like, you get these things all the time. But my spidey sense was tingling and I went, yeah, I'll call this guy. That's a good, good effort on the marketing.
Sure.
I'll call.
Just call him up.
And I think that was my email. Hey, you cold mailed me. Good job.
Is this like the Gordon Gekko speech? You have what it took, buddy, to get into my office.
Yeah.
What do you got?
What do you got? And so we went through, his kind of thought around property casualty insurance and that sort of stuff. And it was great. I mean, he was pointing out some things that people kind of generally miss, like they just accept the value that the insurance company assigns to your stuff in your house. And he said, well, how much is your house worth? And I told him, and he says, well, look at your policy. Does that number match up? And I was like, well, no, it doesn't. And he says, okay, so let me tell you how this would work. And it was a lot of education. And I said, all right, well, let's run some quotes. So he did. And then he never asked how much we were paying, which to me was like the pro move. It's like when you go, we were talking about Navy Federal, right?
Yes.
And the car guy wants to know, well, how much payment do you want? What do I got to beat? It's like, no. Just give me the best strategy, this best solution that you think for. So he comes back and he says, here are these companies that I think would work well. And yada, yada, yada. And he says, who are you with now? And I said, well, we've got the Costco deal with, it used to be Ameriprise, it's some other company now. And he goes, I don't think we're going to beat him. But let me tell you why I think we'd be better. And, it goes through all this stuff. I already know that he's $1,000 cheaper. So he's like going page by page, which was great because he thought that he was going to not beat it on price. So he was trying to find make sure I knew about value. All the features and benefits and the values. Yeah. So anyway.
Boy, that's where an agent comes in handy. And I've found that the last agent that I had was horrible and did not get that. Like totally didn't get it. When my house was broken into and I had to file that claim and it was just a pain, the agent just disappeared. And I thought that was the perfect time for the agent to prove their worth. I think if I ran an insurance agency and there were claims, I would be helping people make sure things got done right, make it as easy as possible. I remember the woman even telling me, she's like, no, I'm just going to give you the 1-800 number. I'm like, really? You're going to give me a 1-800 number? And I got that there had to be that handoff, but it wasn't even a pretty handoff. It was a don't bother me, call them handoff.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. That's frustrating. Well, I was impressed with this person and I had like you been, you just do it on, you do what's convenient, and you just kind of let it slide. It sounds like a lot of people are going to be shopping for insurance if you live in wildfire areas, apparently.
Well, there's something interesting. Depending on where you live in the country, there are different natural phenomenons. Obviously, we just had a hurricane and a tropical storm down here, not that far from us, really, Louisiana and in around Houston. You look at these areas, and a big question that these insurance companies are saying that you need to ask is, what's the price of your insurance on this house going to be? If you're buying a new house, number one, ask if it's going to be insurable. In fact, Ross Buckmueller, president and chief executive of Pure Insurance, which focuses on high net worth clients, says if you want to buy a house in the canyons of Beverly Hills, you should check that it's insurable. It's not about somebody couldn't get insurance at a fair price. It's you can't get insurance at all in some places now. Like, yeah, too many wildfires. Can't do it.
Well, I think there's also, there's some intricacy there where the federal government kind of sort of steps in and helps kind of assuage that for the insurance carriers too, depending on the type of claim. We experienced that when we had our big hailstorm and got a new roof. The insurance company was trying to explain it to me, but I think there's some of that too. But I think, you know, it all just comes down to probability. And if you're specializing in one area and that risk factor happens too many times, then you've got to kind of divest yourself of that risk. I was looking at a rental property. A realtor that I know down here was sending me stuff. He says, hey, I think this would be a great rental. And it's on the coast and it's brand new. It's really nice. And that last hurricane that went through, albeit mild, directly went over that house. I mean, I said, I emailed him and I said, show me the before and afters. Boy, I missed that. Dodge that bullet.
You know, when you talk about risk, we mentioned this a few weeks ago in our insurance episode, but Gary Pasternak, head of insurance advisory at Bessemer Trust, a wealth management firm, he said that with some of his California clients, OG, they're putting in their own wildfire protection systems instead of paying high premiums on insurance with limited coverage. What that means is they're just telling their high net worth individuals to set aside money. Because instead of paying I'm looking at some of these, a guy, Charles Williamson, chief executive of Vault, insurance said, we just charged somebody $1.9 million for insurance in California with a $1 million deductible.
Huh.
So
how big the house was.
Bessemer Trust. I think it's probably.
Do you think that he means setting aside money or do you think he actually means like plumbing in like your own fire protection service?
I don't know. Maybe he means that, but it is interesting. It goes back to what we said, whether it is setting money aside or putting in your own fire protection scheme, it's more about risk management than buying insurance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this trust company is looking at other ways to handle the problem versus buying insurance. And I think if more people do that and start thinking that way, I think you'll make better insurance decisions.
Yeah. For everything.
Yeah. All right. We got three stackers coming up here shortly, but Doug is on deck and he's been busy, OG. Dude's been super. You notice he's been running around since we got here. I think Doug
sweaty.
I might have gotten here an hour before we did. Well, let's see, Doug. What's going on, man?
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Hey, folks. Sorry, I got to be quick today because, as I said on Monday, winter is coming to the basement. Why is that? Well, it's because today's the last day of summer, of course. I'm in full-on winterproofing mode here, especially now that we've learned from last year that Snowmageddon down here in Texas is a real possibility. Aren't you winterizing? Look, don't wait too long. Get on it. While I get my chore list together, let's get you your trivia question. On this date in 1981, the first woman was appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. The question is, who was it? I'll be back with your answer faster than we can have order. Order, please.
If you've ever tried to buy a car, you know what a frustrating experience it can be. Sitting across from a dealer, they don't want to talk about the price of the car. They want to talk about payments. You might not even want to talk about financing. You just want to get to the bottom line. And if you're buying it from an individual, you might not know where the car's been. The person tells you that it's in pristine condition, but is it really? Is that rattle more than just a little rattle? Well, guess what? When you become a member of Navy Federal Credit Union, life gets better. Buying a car has never been easier because they've created this fully loaded car buying experience. You can buy, finance if you need to, protect, and enjoy your auto purchase all through one convenient place. Speaking of financing, they have low rates and pre-approval good for 90 days. So while you're shopping, you'll know exactly what you can afford. And when it comes to that price of a car, well, you'll save thousands off MSRP with Navy Federal's car buying service powered by TrueCar. I said you will. It really is you can, and I did. You can also get exclusive member savings with Carfax, so you'll know where that car's been. Geico and you insure it. SiriusXM for fun. They're always available with 24/7 member service representatives to answer any questions. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/car buying. That's NavyFederal.org/car buying. Credit and collateral subject to approval. Your actual savings off MSRP may vary. Navy Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s. The breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hey there, Stackers. I'm famous extreme weather prepper and legal expert, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And since we can have a little mini ice age at any time here in Texas, I need to get started on the winter preparation a little bit early. I need to put a cover on the inflatable pool, gotta clean out those leaves first, put some duct tape over the window cracks, and I gotta get a lot of ramen. I mean, like, a lot of ramen, but only the shrimp flavor. The chicken stuff is gross. And we can't forget about the alcohol. If I'm going to be trapped down here with these yahoos, we may as well at least make a good time out of it. Or, like, blind drunk, so I don't have to look at them. As you can see, I've got my work cut out for me. But before I go, let's get back to today's trivia. The question was, who was the first woman appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court? At the age of 51, Sandra Day O'Connor became the first woman on the Supreme Court. And there have now been 3 other women appointed since then. Awesome. Let's get back to you and your questions. See ya.
All right. Normally, this is where we would dive into a single interview, but let's start off with Tenacity OG. That's going to be our first guest today. Sarah Losey is somebody who became a stacker recently. What's really cool is she's the person that set us up with Eric Brotman. She works specifically with Eric when he came on to the show talking about don't retire, graduate, right, to the next yep. part of your life. But Sarah had this wonderful story and now is in our basement Facebook group and corresponds with our community. So stacker story number one, what do you do when your boss isn't treating you right? Especially now, you find a way to go make more money. Coming down to the basement, the stalker of the Stacking Benjamin show, Sarah Losey, joins us. How are you?
I am good. I have left you alone. I have gone home. So now I haven't stalked you in quite some time. I hope that's okay.
You have not. You had the best opening statement of anybody who's approached me about the show. And it was, if I don't talk to you, my boss is going to fire me. That was pretty good. And it turned out, I found out later, because I know your boss and he's been on the show. He would never fire you in a million years.
That is probably true. But my concern was when someone walks up to you and says, hi, I've been casually stalking you all day. Your response should not be, here's my phone number. Like, I was a little worried. I mean, maybe because, like, I'm 5 foot tall and kind of look 11. So maybe it's okay. But in most situations, I really hope you would have like turned and ran.
That could be taken completely the wrong way, Sarah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not often am I walking down the hall and somebody's like, Joe from Stacky Benjamins. I'm like, what? All right. We're not here for that. We're here to tell your story because as we were chatting, you've got a story that is so unique when it comes to money. And I love your story because it shows that you're not going to get things perfect right away. Like things are not going to be perfect, but you can still turn things around. And you had a bad job making low pay and really took charge of your career and changed everything. So tell me about that.
My story is just weird. And I like to say it all started with an accidental inappropriate tattoo. I think I told you that tattoo story. Yes. I was at a job. It wasn't a bad job. It was a great company. It was becoming very clear that it was not a fit. Someone looked me in the eye. The owner of the company looked me in the eye and said, "Why would they want you? You're just a copywriter," when I was offered a marketing manager position for one of our clients. And that's not great to hear.
That's not the only thing your boss told you. She was mean.
I don't want to be mean on air. She's not a mean person. She was not who I would choose to be my boss for the rest of my life. Let's leave it that way. Great human being, not someone I would want to work for forever.
But you're working as a copywriter in this company. You said it's a great company. Yes. She's not great to work for. When did you realize that it was time to move on?
About the time that she said that to me. And I was like, if I'm not getting the respect that I feel like I deserve, then I'm going to look somewhere else. And I took a solo trip to Ireland. And it was actually this time 3 years ago or 2 years ago. And I ended up, after a 12-hour bar crawl through Dublin with a group of strangers, I ended up in a tattoo shop and I asked for an airplane tattoo. And my parents don't know the story, so that I hope they don't listen to this. I asked for an airplane and the guy, I don't know if he didn't like tourists or if he's just not very good at what he does, he tattooed a penis on my arm. That should have been like the worst thing that could have happened to me at that time. But it is to this day my favorite thing that's ever happened because that trip was just so profound for me. And I have gotten it covered up. It looks like an airplane now. It looks fantastic. But I look at this tattoo and I'm like, if I was bold enough to cancel a trip I was supposed to take with a boyfriend who was not good for me, we were going to get engaged, go to Greece, this whole thing, not a good relationship. If I had the guts to cancel that and take myself on a solo trip to Ireland and get a tattoo, even if it looked like a penis, then I can do anything I want to do. It gave me that courage to make those bold choices. And I end up quitting my job. I moved to Texas and just started a life here. And then a couple months later, I ended up taking the job that I was offered originally. And even though I was just a copywriter, I became director of marketing for that company. And I ended up starting my own side company through them, which I was, after your conversation with my boss on your show, I was actually offered ownership of that company.
Wow. Hey, I deserve a commission, I think, but we'll save that for
I haven't gotten a cent from it, so you'll get half of zero.
It's the same thing we pay Doug, so that's good.
Perfect.
We give him a 30% raise every year. And
pay him what he's worth.
Works fantastic. But I want to unpack all these different things that you said, because this is powerful stuff. Sometimes it's being just in the place and changing your surroundings that I think can be so, so life-changing. You talk about this solo trip to Ireland, though, and it sounds kind of spur of the moment, Sarah. I mean, it sounds like you almost got on a plane and went. Like, what was the impetus to go to Ireland by yourself?
Like I said, I was in a relationship. It was not a good situation. There was substance abuse issues and trust issues and all of this stuff. And I was kind of just stuck in it. And in my head, I mean, I was 20, 21 years old. So of course, this is endgame. This is going to be the person I'm with forever. He is in jail at the time that I book us a trip to Greece to get engaged. Clearly, I was a great decision maker. I don't know if he knew we were getting engaged in Greece, but if you take me to Greece and you don't propose to me, I'm breaking up with you. Thankfully, we didn't get to that point, because when he got out of jail and then went back to jail a week later, I decided maybe we should just kind of fast forward to the breakup.
Maybe this is wrong.
And yeah. Yeah. You know, I have bad taste in men, but it's okay. So I had that trip booked and I it's my dream to go there and I still want it to go. But I was like, it's going to be really depressing to go to the country I want to get engaged in by myself. But I still had it planned. So I was like, where can I go that might be a little better? Where can I go that I'll be safe at 20 years old by myself, 21, whatever I was. And I just picked Ireland. It was such a beautiful place. The people, from what I had heard, were so nice, and I wouldn't feel like I was in danger being there alone. And it just happened. I packed up and I went, and it was one of, to this day, one of the best weeks I've ever had.
So you just changed the ticket. Did a ticket exchange from Greece, go to Ireland instead, book some hotels?
Pretty much. And I had the money that I had put down as a deposit. I got it back and just switched it over.
Yeah.
And no regrets.
Did he have a ticket to Greece as well?
So I canceled both of our trips and I kept both of our deposits
yeah.
and put it towards Ireland.
Gotcha. Okay. And so it sounds like, I mean, not only did you have the bar crawl, which ends up with a penis on your arm, but it sounds like,
sorry, mom and dad.
It sounds like you did a lot of thinking there though, that you really had like this time alone and getting away was important time.
It was. It kind of made me realize that I could be on my own. I feel like when I was in that relationship, I was very dependent on him emotionally and in all ways. Being on my own, being in that country, doing all of that stuff, I kind of realized that I can be on my own. And now fast forward a few years later, like I was single after that relationship forever. Like I still, to this day, I've not been in a substantial relationship, and it's been years because I wanted to get to the point where I was independent in my career. I was independent in my life. I was doing everything myself so that I knew I could do it on my own. And then I would get to the point that I could bring a man into my life that I don't have to rely on. So yeah. I'm building a house. I have, my career is going amazing. Like I said, I was just offered ownership in the company, which is crazy. I'm only 26 and I feel like I'm just having that experience taught me that I have to do things on my own and I have to be okay with it.
Which brings me to the next question. So then you come back, you're still at the same job and you decide to make that, you know, you very flippantly said that, and then I moved to Austin. Did you know people in Austin? Was the job, were you going to keep working at the job in Austin? Did you quit the job and have an idea for a new career before you went to Austin? Like, tell me about that move.
So I had another trip that I had went on and I get back from that. I had never been to Texas. I hadn't left the East Coast, basically. Like I've been out of the country, but in this country, I had not left the coast. I did not like living in Maryland, which is where I was. I was miserable there. And I knew I wanted to leave. I went to the owner of the company and I was like, I need to get out of Maryland. I don't necessarily want to leave the company. Like, would you give me the opportunity to work remote and see if it works out?
And you were in the type of job, you were in the type of job, by the way, where you could easily do that.
Oh yeah. I was a copywriter, social media manager. Everything that I did was online.
Yeah.
So it would have been possible, but that's not what she wanted for her company. So I said, okay. About a week later, I had three interviews set up in Texas. One of the companies flew me in. The other one of them set me up in a nice hotel right on the Riverwalk in San Antonio. And I ended up getting all three offers. I picked the one in Austin just because that seemed like the city I would want to be in. And on my 24th birthday, I got back from Texas, walked into the office and gave her my 2 weeks notice. And I was living in Texas within 3 weeks. And 5 months later, I was fired.
And how am I, let me drop that bomb. The jobs in Texas, pay raise?
Yes, but they didn't know that. I lied about how much I was making.
Okay.
And said that I need at least a match and matched it.
Gotcha. But that's important. I was going to ask you about negotiating a higher salary. So you told them a number that was not true. And then they matched it. I think there's lessons here for bosses that are listening because, you know, studies show that it's so hard to train new people. It's so hard to get new people up to speed. Like companies lose so much money having to continually retrain people when they could just keep the people happy that they have. And it's amazing. One piece of advice a mentor gave me a long time ago was, you know, besides being a good boss, there's also two things you don't mess with. Don't mess with people's hours and don't mess with their paycheck. Like don't mess with those couple things. you know, it seems like hours wise, your boss messed with your hours by not letting you do this job that you can do from anywhere.
Yeah, I actually, while I was working at that company, I was working three jobs. I was bartending in downtown Baltimore, and I was serving at a sports bar around the corner. And when I went to her on like my first or second annual review, I asked her for a raise and she laughed at me. I was like, I just want to be able to not work three jobs. And she said, you're lucky that I let you go at five, so you have time to work more jobs. It's like, okay, I'm going to find a job that I don't have to do that.
Wow. Yeah. Tell me about getting fired from the Austin job.
Oh, you mean the best thing that's happened to me? Yes.
Was it the best thing? Because I got fired, Sarah, from one job also. And I will tell you now, I was devastated at the time. It was the best business lesson I've ever had. It was fantastic.
Seriously. I am so thankful to that company for letting me go when they did. I wish they had done it about 2 weeks earlier because I had a trip to Europe planned that I had to cancel. And they basically let me go right when I would have come back from it. So like, come on, guys, you knew I had that trip. Fire me earlier. But I think I was only at that company for about 5 months and I was a marketing manager for a retail company. And I was answering directly to the CEO who... he knew what he was doing in like his business, but he did not understand marketing. And he was setting me these marketing goals that did not in any way align with what I was actually doing. And there was no way I was going to meet these standards. It was not going to happen. So when he would meet with me every week, I'd be like, look, I did this. He's like, but did you do that? I'm like, no, but I did this. Like what he was asking for, I don't even think was possible. And it wasn't my job. It was the job of the stores that our products were in. It just wasn't working out. I was miserable. I think every single time I'd have to sit down with him, I'd have to take a Xanax. My anxiety was through the roof because I just knew it was not going well. And I had been sitting on an offer from my current company, the one that had been trying to hire me for the last 2 years, trying to steal me from the agency I was at and all of this. And I'm sitting on this offer. I had negotiated the salary up higher than I expected he would approve. And he had offered me moving costs. He'd offered to buy me out of my lease, anything to get me to work for him. And I turned it down because it was around Christmas time. That's retail's busiest season. I can't just walk away from this company and leave them hanging. So I turned him down and then they let me go. And I called my now boss the same day. And I was like, okay, I didn't tell him I got fired. I left that out because I felt like if I told him that I would kind of lose some of my negotiating power. I'm desperate.
You are very good at marketing, Sarah.
I'm just a copywriter. But I call him and I'm like, okay, I will take the job, but because he did not believe in remote work. That was not an option. I will work for you, but I'm staying in Austin. I'm working remote. I will take a pay cut from what we had discussed to cover travel when you want to fly me in. And I will fly in for a maximum of 1 week every month. Give me 6 months. And he just said, I'll have a job offer to you on Monday. So they gave me a 6 month trial period to be an interim marketing manager. By month three, I was director of marketing.
And Sarah lived happily ever after.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Hey, thanks for telling your story. I think there's so many lessons there. Maybe not going to get a penis on your arm or lying about your current salary, but I think the rest of it has.
I mean, it worked out for me, so it could work out for others. And I get to look at it every day, and it does not look like a penis anymore.
It does not. I saw it when we were.
I get to tell a fun story.
I saw it when we were in Nashville, and it does not at all. It looks like a cool airplane now.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks a ton, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks to Sarah. Here's what I can't believe, OG. Of all times, like how tone deaf do you have to be her boss and think, oh, she's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
Like she's not going to leave. And when you see the studies that show how much disruption there is in an organization when you have to hire a new person to replace an experienced person and just the ramp up of that person so that they equal the output of whatever job they had of the experienced person, training costs are a real thing. And I think too often bosses are flippant, especially now. Like, man, there's so many jobs open. It's such a great time to move and find more money. And Sarah did it when her boss said, yeah, you're not going to make any more money than this. Yes, I will.
See you later.
Yeah. You know, we've talked in the past about driving things like Uber and Lyft and how difficult it is to make good money doing those. Some people do it. We had a stacker come on and tell us that they were able to do it. However, it's a difficult game. But here's a new game. Well, new-ish. It's been around a while, but I've seen more and more people doing it. Have you ever thought about renting out your car like your Avis using Turo?
I've seen this. I would personally not do it, but I've seen this, and I've also seen like something that's very similar, and maybe they've expanded to airports as well. But I saw an ad for if you're a business traveler, which, you know, there's like six of those people left in the country right now. Right. You know, let's say that you're gone all week, right? You fly out Monday morning, fly home Friday night, you drop your car off, and that becomes like one of Avis's cars that they'll rent.
Yeah.
But it's not Avis, it's something else.
Whoever, yeah.
And they pay you like a monthly fee plus take care of all the maintenance plus, you know, whatever.
While you're gone.
While you're gone.
You don't know the name of that company, by the way?
I can't recall. No, it was a new startup type thing. Kind of like a Turo, but yeah, focused on being at the airport because that's where the cars
great
are.
Great idea. Yeah. Great idea. Christopher in our stacker group, The Basement, he just started with them. And we thought we could get a quick look at the onboarding process and his early success or failure. Let's find out what Christopher has to say. And on my dad's shortwave radio, it's my friend Christopher. How are you, man?
Right. How are you doing?
I'm great now that you're here. I was fascinated when you posted in The Basement that you were getting involved with Turo. And for background, tell me why you decided to start with Turo. Was it you were looking to pay some bills? You just want to make a little extra money? Why did you decide to give strangers your car?
Right. Well, it's not my personal car. What I decided to do is go all out and go purchase a second vehicle.
Just for this?
Just for Turo, yes. It was just to make additional money. I've had some things in my life that didn't go, you know, the way I thought it would, with personal health issues and things. So at one particular, I'll just say I have multiple sclerosis.
Oh.
I was diagnosed in 2005, and I'm now wheelchair dependent. So being on disability and limited income, you start to think that there's nothing else for you. So I came to an epiphany, even a new awakening for myself, and said, you know, these restrictions that I have because of my health, they don't define me. And that only happened. I mean, I was diagnosed 2005. This new way of thinking only happened a few years ago. I've since gone back to school, gotten an AA in school now for a second AA. I decided I don't have to struggle for money. I don't have to live under the poverty level, you know, in order to receive these benefits that are given to me. So one of the things was part of my new awakening was perfecting my credit. So I did perfect my credit and got to the point where I said, well, I'll try this Turo thing, but I don't want to have my car on it, my personal vehicle that I have. Although I don't drive anymore. My son drives, but I didn't want to put that on there. So I said, hey, I'll leverage my credit and go ahead and get a vehicle. I looked on and saw that the Nissan Altima, it was fairly popular, consistent. It just happened. It came up and it was nice looking. So I went ahead and went and purchased it, put it on the 23rd, received my first booking on the 24th.
Well, I have so many questions, by the way.
Go ahead, sir. Let it loose, sir.
Well, when you talk about your education, this has nothing to do with Turo. You said you got an AA. I don't know what an AA is.
Yes. Oh, okay. It's an associate's degree.
Gotcha. Okay.
Community college level.
That is awesome. That's so fantastic. Yeah. And what'd you get your degrees in?
My initial was to transfer and go to a university, but it's extremely expensive.
Sure.
At the university level. So I did get a transfer degree in business to transfer, but my major was accounting.
Gotcha.
So I'm in banking and finance now. I'm going to complete that degree in December.
No wonder you're talking about stacking Benjamins.
Yes, sir. You just don't know. I mean, I have so many things cooking. I have an LLC with my brother and sister where we do real estate investing. Now, we started it right when COVID happened, so
of course
it didn't necessarily work. We did a house hack. They house hacked, my brother and sister, house hacked a condo that we recently did a cash out refi on. So we paid ourselves back our initial investment, and now we have a little money that we're going to put down and finance the next.
Well, and I want to ask you about Turo on that front, because obviously, with your background in accounting and business, you must have put some numbers down. Like when you look at the payment on the Nissan versus the amount you expect to bring in, how profitable do you expect Turo to be, Christopher?
Well, at this particular point, less than a month now, I have the car payment and insurance for the Nissan done for September and already put a dent in October.
And we're all, and by the way, for everybody who's listening, we're recording this just a little under a week before it goes live. So this is the 16th. We're only halfway done with the month. And now the rest of it goes to you. Every dollar you make so far in September goes in your pocket. Or like you said, you goes toward October and getting ahead.
Yeah. And that's the way I think about it. I don't necessarily think it goes to me. I pay it forward. So it's monies that are there for additional expenses that come about.
Next question I was on the financing. Obviously, financing costs right now incredibly low, so that's really working in your favor. But do you see yourself paying off the car early, or are you going to month by month arbitrage the difference between that low rate and the higher amount of money you're bringing in through Turo?
Yes, I would do it that way because I don't feel that there's an urgency to pay it when the interest rate is 3%.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that's making me, you know, rush to pay it off. Now, if the car continues to go as it is now, I will definitely put a little bit extra into it as we go, but definitely not rushing. I did want to maintain a leverage on the credit.
Sure.
I didn't want to do that. Yeah.
Let's talk about the Turo experience, if you don't mind. Signing up with them, their customer service people, using the app. How is all that experience gone?
All right. Customer service, let me say that first, had no contact with Turo.
None.
At all. None. Zero. I did it all just online myself. It gives you everything that you need to enter. And you do that, it's really simple, even with putting your account, your banking account number, where it's going to send the funds. All of that is seamless, sir.
I'm thinking that's a good thing then, that you don't need any customer service because it's so easy.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And I think that's the way they want it, too. Of course, no one wants customer contact anymore. they definitely want to limit that anymore. But it's really simple.
And then my next question is, I've heard from people that you kind of got to make your car insurance a little more robust when you're using Turo. Did you have any issues there?
Well, I've already had on my first vehicle, my personal vehicle, I'll say, already had Geico, so it's a second vehicle.
Okay.
And I'm adding on. So I'm sure that helps.
Yeah.
I did not make contact with them to inquire if I needed additional insurance.
Gotcha.
Because I was going to Turo. And I didn't do that because Turo is more of an insurance deal, if you will, because I have to have insurance on my side through Turo, as well as the guests.
Gotcha. That's the additional insurance is through Turo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so anything that happens that we travel personally, it would go on the Geico side and my personal, and anything that when they're driving, It's all on the Toro side.
So when you say that you've already made all your September money and now you're working on October a little bit, that includes the Toro insurance cost.
Well, Toro insurance goes, you elect a plan.
Okay.
And for my particular plan, you elect a deductible. And my deductible is $250. I have the $250 plan. And that actually dictates the amount of money that Toro gets per booking. So that's how they do the insurance.
That makes a lot of sense. The people that rent your vehicle, you know, everybody worries that. I remember my roommate in college, Christopher, whenever he had a rental car, he would see how fast it would make it to 60. He would abuse the hell out of that car. Have you had good people using your car, or are you seeing early wear and tear?
No, they're really respectful. Part of my particular vehicle bookings is you return the car as you receive the car, gas and cosmetically. So it's already expressed. So we are very respectful so far when they take it and drive it and bring it back. Now, I cannot necessarily say what they do as far as speed and recklessness. However, I elected to purchase a tracker. I put a tracker on the vehicle, so I know where the vehicle is at all times. It gives you a GPS picture of where your vehicle is and the surroundings and everything.
Nice.
Yes. So it's really good. I'm less nervous about what they're going to do with it. I'm just more comfortable with the situation.
Oh, I would totally be more comfortable knowing where my knowing where my car's at. Well, I can't wait to talk to you, my friend, in about a year and see how it's going then too. Check back in. If you don't mind, we'd love to do that. But congratulations on all your success recently. And thanks for hanging out with us and talking Turo for a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Yes, I appreciate you. You guys are doing a great job there. I love Stack and Vigilance.
Big thanks to Christopher for hanging out. I don't know, man. Sounds like it might be a good opportunity. I can't wait to hear more from Christopher when he's got more data under his belt. Yeah. Our last interview is with Ryan. Ryan, by the way, has a side gig. Actually, it isn't even a gig. It is a passion project. It's called Mac Brewing. And Ryan was nice enough to send OG and I some beers. And we're talking to Ryan about maybe him making a Stacky Benjamin's brew. So in the next couple of weeks, we're going to do a live YouTube where OG and I are going to test out Ryan's beers, and we're going to give our verdicts on three different brews that he sent to us. It sounds like a lot of fun, but here's the thing. Life is about more than work. I mean, why do you work? So that you can have things that you're passionate about that you do, so that you can have fun, have some fun hobbies. I know that Austin Kleon talks about keeping hobbies because it informs your work and it makes it even better. But how about if that passion is brewing beer? Let's talk about having a good, fun, fulfilling hobby with Ryan Mack. And on My Dad's Shortwave Radio, it's my new friend, Ryan Mack. I say my new friend, but anybody that sends me beer should be like old friend, Ryan Mack. How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you, Joe?
I'm glad you're here with us. And I don't know if you know this, Ryan, OG and I are very, very finicky about our beer. We're like, we are beer connoisseurs, my friend, and we're going to roast you.
Elevated palates. No, it's nothing I haven't seen or experienced before. I'm thick skinned. I'm ready for it.
Elevated palate. Yeah. It's not quite as good as Pabst, but you know, yeah. I want to ask you about your hobby because I think doing a little bit of research on you, did your dad get a homebrew kit like 6 years ago and handed it to you? Like it was almost 6 years ago you started brewing beer. What was the genesis?
No, exactly right. I actually gave him a 1 gallon homebrew starter kit. These are pretty common.
Oh,
I
think. You gave it to him.
I gave it to him. Yep. And I think mine was from Brooklyn Brew Shop. It's a good one actually to get into the hobby. But yeah, we did it together over Christmas at my folks' house. And my mom actually bless her, couldn't stand the smell in the house. And so she said, this thing is out of here. I took it back from Michigan to Chicago. And then, you know, equipment purchases started to add up over the years. And yeah, almost 6 years ago at Christmas now.
What was the first beer that you did?
You know, I think it was just a standard pale ale recipe. My folks, especially my dad, he's a beer drinker. He's a lager, light lager drinker, basically, not a hop head or anything like that. So I wanted to keep it pretty neutral. So yeah, went from there.
Your dad's me. That is totally me. I used to be a hop head and I can't do it anymore.
Ah, yeah. See, he never was. That's the difference.
Yeah. So investing money in the hobby, like when did you know that was it that first time you got hooked? You're like, oh, I could do this far more often.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say investing in the traditional sense, because it could be a money sink. Homebrewing's a great hobby. It's a big passion of mine. It can be dangerous from a financial standpoint and from a health standpoint. So you got to have a healthy relationship with booze, obviously. But from a money standpoint, yeah, I think after the first batch, I quickly realized, wow, this was pretty inefficient and time consuming to brew like 6 pints of beer out of a 1 gallon batch. Why don't we scale this up a little bit, then start investigating, reading up, listening to podcasts, et cetera. And you start to learn, oh, there's way better ways to do things. There's more equipment you can get. And ultimately, you want to get to that tipping point of scale where as a home brewer, you're making beer that is actually cost effective, you know, less than you're going to buy craft beer for after you've made some of those initial equipment investments. So from that perspective, yeah, it can pay off once you get to stable kind of 5 gallon production range and you've got your setup and you're not always chasing the next best shiny piece of equipment, because there's a lot of it out there. That's for sure.
This is not what you do. Just to be clear for everybody, this is not what you do full time. What do you do full time?
I work in software consulting. So working for a consulting firm that partners with automation technologies and provides services, advisory, implementation, development, et cetera, for clients here based out of Chicago.
And then with your passion here, does that affect your job? Does that affect your ability to do your job at all? Does it make it more fun?
Well, it's a dangerous question because folks might be listening from work, but no, it makes it much more fun. You know, this remains my hobby on the side. I take a lot of the principles from my day job, which is all about process optimization and automation and efficiency, and apply that to the brewing world to make either my brew day shorter or my production life cycle a little shorter. And then the fun part is I've actually got my company, Ashling Partners, again here in Chicago, as a corporate customer. We've got a nice little relationship where Mac Brewing supplies beer to the office. So it keeps it fun.
What did you have to learn? Did you have to learn some things about, because I'm thinking about the health department. I'm thinking about you and I, before we hit record, you were talking about if you went further, you'd have to have a professional kitchen. Like, did you have to learn some rules and regulations along the way before you started handing beers over to individuals? Or are there some easy to learn rules?
I think easy to learn rules. I think if you're going to accept a homebrew from someone, you're taking on potentially some level of risk if they don't know what the heck they're doing. But the biggest rule number one is always sanitize everything. So homebrewers are hopefully cleaner folks. It's part art, part science in terms of what you learn along the way to make good beer. I probably lean more toward the art side than the science side, admittedly. So like to experiment with ingredients and process and stuff. But the one thing I'm always going to do is make sure I've got good sanitization practices, yeah, to make sure we're not giving anyone anything funky that's not going to agree with them.
You have over the years won awards, and I've noticed the awards kind of seem to be coming more quickly now. Did that take you a while to kind of figure out what best recipes would kind of get you where you're at today? Like, tell me about the awards you've won.
Yeah, I think there's an evolution that happens where you start brewing, your interest gets piqued, you start investing potentially in equipment, you start learning the process, and you get to this point where you want to, you know, it's not just, oh my gosh, I made something that resembles beer and it's drinkable. Now you actually want to hand someone a beer and get some critique. And then you move away from established recipes and you start experimenting on your own. And then that's kind of when you want to enter the competition sphere. And I don't do it too seriously. There are, you know, regional and national competitions that that get very serious. I like to do a lot of the fun ones, organize some of my own with other buddies back in Michigan who I've actually taught to brew along the way. So try and keep it fun there. But yeah, you get to this point where you've got recipes that are your own, and it's not necessarily anything proprietary, right? People have tried a lot of things, and a lot of breweries nowadays are really open and helpful to homebrewers. I think of Bell's for sure. I'm in a competition that's actually getting announced on Sunday from Bell's. Somewhere like Deschutes out in the Pacific Northwest, they publish all their ingredients and recipes for homebrewers. So not too much proprietary there, but you really want to start to kind of show off, get some real folks who know beer very well inside and out, and get them to evaluate if you're doing the right things and if you're doing a good job. And the awards have, you know, I don't have a ton of them, but they have started to get better and better, better hit rates. I'm hoping to enter a few and hopefully take home some hardware this fall and winter.
Bell's Beer, a great Kalamazoo company. I heard, Ryan, that people like from Kalamazoo are badasses. Is that true?
I guess I don't know too many folks from Kalamazoo. I was more from the Metro Detroit kind of Ann Arbor sphere. I know a few folks, but
well, I guess then I'll have to tell you that people from Kalamazoo are badasses. That's fair.
That's fair. Yes. I was there 2 weeks ago dropping off beer at Bell's for competition. I knocked on the doors. Actually, I was hoping to grab a beer. I got off the Amtrak. It was 10:45, and turns out they didn't open until noon. So I
had the Amtrak, you're like 20 yards away, or yeah. I mean, it is right at the Amtrak station.
It's too convenient. If only the Amtrak had a little courtesy 30-minute stop to let you run over there before continuing on, that'd be nice.
Right. Go over there and say, "Hey, Larry, how you doing?"
Yeah, that's a good marketing idea. I think Bell's and Amtrak should partner together.
You should be in marketing, not in software. Tell me about the cost to get where you are, because like you're wearing a Mac Brewing t-shirt. I have my Mac Brewing t-shirt on yesterday, by the way. You're having a lot of fun with this, but I'm also hearing that to get good at it, you've really spent a lot of time on your equipment. Like I've got my board game obsession. What does it cost you to get your brewing equipment?
You're probably looking at, if you want to get up to a point where you're brewing 5 gallons of beer, doing it right, you're probably looking at $1,500 to $2,000 on all of the kind of base equipment. You're gonna want to keg your beer. So, you know, I actually had a hand-me-down kegerator, had to replace it. And so that I built that into a bar. Listeners can't see this, but built it into a bar, which bless my wife is happy enough to have in the main family room here. And you're gonna want a temperature controlled fermentation area, right? So you use a chest freezer or something like that. There's these things called keezers where you can serve your beer. But anyway, there's certain big hitter pieces of equipment, pots, pans, all that good stuff, propane burners, all the way up to kind of these all-in-one electric type systems that are going to be many, many thousands of dollars. But I'd say probably $1,500 to $2,000 kind of get you up to that point where you're really ready to go. And hopefully that wouldn't discourage anyone who's looking at the hobby, because I mean, literally for $50, you can brew a gallon of beer with a pre-made intro kit and stuff that you have sitting around your kitchen, and you can definitely make drinkable beer. Now, would you do that over and over? And yeah, is it going to be worth your time and cost? Probably not.
No, but that's what I was thinking. You wouldn't start with $1,500 to $2,000. Like I wouldn't go spend that kind of money. Do the $50 thing first, get your feet wet, figure out what you're doing, and then begin upgrading.
And then my other advice, would really be you do that on your own. That's all. You can get that online. You can go to a shop. You can get that. I mean, And then you want to find a local homebrew shop. They're becoming more and more common. I know here in Chicago, we have a number of them. And those people are just kind of great with advice. They'll tell you what next piece of equipment is going to be the best bang for your buck in terms of upgrading. And you can kind of figure out and build your own system as opposed to jumping to one of those pre-built things that's many thousands of dollars. So I'd say $1,500 to $2,000 kind of over a year or two probably was probably over more like 2 to 3 years was kind of my ramp up period.
Yeah. And that really is a smaller sum of money than I thought that it was going to be. There's no way that affects your ability to achieve financial independence. I mean, I think it makes it hell of a lot more fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you do get to scale, right, I can put out a batch of, you know, an easy drinking lager or a pale ale with not too much hops, because those drive some cost. But if you're really cost conscious, you know, I can put out maybe 5 gallons of beer, which is going to net you roughly, you know, 50 beers, give or take, for probably about $25. So, you know, much, much cheaper than if you're buying craft beer regularly.
What are you working on now? What are you trying to achieve now? A beer that you haven't done previously?
Well, one of the ones you're going to try, and I hope to hear some good feedback on, is I went back to my Michigan roots, and it's fall season here starting up. The weather's getting, I was back in Ann Arbor. It's football weather for sure. So did a cider mill donut inspired brown ale. And that one's actually there for competition at Bell's. So they're going to be rating it and giving results on this Sunday. So you'll have that before you guys do your review, if you want to cheat a little bit on the analysis. But yeah, apples, cinnamon mixed with kind of the sweetness and brown sugar, brown ale. I think it gives a nice fall flavor. So that's definitely one that was new for me. I didn't know how the apples would work, but I think it came together pretty nice.
That sounds delicious. I never knew before I went to the Upper Peninsula a few weeks ago that blueberry beer was something I'd like. I don't know, fruit and beer are not two things that I generally like together, but man, blueberry beer was addictive. That was so good.
I might have to try. I've done a lot of blood orange type pineapple, mango, sours generally with a lot of fruit, more of the red, strawberry, raspberry, less so strawberry, more so raspberry. Actually, one of the ones you're going to try also is kind of an orange summery kind of.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't find blood oranges. Turns out they're not in season until I think the January timeframe, which I didn't know going in.
I'll be interested to see, because even reading the description of that actually sounded like the one I thought I'd like the best.
But
we shall see. I don't know, man. Donuts right now sound fantastic. So
I was really happy with how that one turned out. Yeah. And then my next beer up on draft is of course, an Oktoberfest here for the season.
Coming you have
up
to.
September. Yep.
I think not your home brewer. You're contractually obligated to make an Oktoberfest.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Ryan, thanks for hanging out with us. By the way, everybody, I'm going to link to your Instagram page for your brewing. And if people want to reach out, I'm sure we have other home brewers. And let's have some stacker talk about homebrewing. I think that'd be a ton of fun. But thanks for hanging out with us. And congrats, by the way, on just getting married. Your wife okay with this hobby? She like it?
Yep. Molly, she's great with it. You know, as some of these competition awards and stuff are coming in, she even recently asked, okay, where do you want to take this? So she's very supportive. You know, again, still thinking a hobby for right now. But yeah, recently married, served some Mac brew at our wedding. So it was a ton of fun. Enjoying things. So thanks so much for having me.
Can't wait to taste those, OG.
They are prominently displayed in my refrigerator right now. So anytime you're ready.
It is going to be awesome. Check for that as soon as OG and I, as you were listening to this, OG and I are in Austin. We're giving a talk at FinCon about this show and about how we've pivoted several times over the years and tried to make the show better all the time. So having a fun week there in Austin. I'm also hosting the Plutus Awards tomorrow night, which will be fun. All right. Thank you so much to Christopher, Ryan, Sarah. Weren't those awesome, OG? People doing cool stuff. I personally think that I would like to be Ryan's next door neighbor until my liver maybe couldn't handle it anymore. But good times. All right. Lots of people to thank. Especially want to thank all of you for hanging out with us. I know your time's valuable, and the fact that you spend it with us makes us really want to make it worth your time. And I hope that today was. I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. Also, last, if you want to translate all those good times, though, into better decisions in the future, OG and his team are taking clients. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/OG. That'll lead you to the link that will put you on the path to seeing how his team can interface with your team to make better decisions the rest of this year and moving into next year. All right, Doug, you got it from here, my friend. What should we have learned today?
Sure thing, Joe. I got this one. First, take a lesson from our headline. Homeowners insurance? Maybe it's time to review your policy and ask whether you have the right amount and are you paying the right price? You just might save a few bucks or gain some coverage you should have been carrying all along. Second, take a lesson from our featured stackers. Learn from your community. There are experts all around you, especially that beer guy. But the big lesson? OG must also be stocking up for winter, so I'm just going to add his Woodford bourbon to the community stash. Wink, wink. That Woodford's good to manage those dark winter nights, but I could also do with a touch less OG Kesha karaoke after he has two or three of those things. But you want to know what makes his singing more manageable? More Woodford. To learn more about our guests and for more resources, you can head to our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2021, and is created by Josal Sehi. Our producer is Karen Rapine. The show is written by Taylor Stevens with help from Joe and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen, check out our show notes page written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. Brooke and Joe also collaborate on a guide to the show and with lots of extras we couldn't include on today's podcast. Heck, they'll also throw in some life money lessons from Joe, and it's all free. It's called The Stacker, and you'll find it at stackingbenjamins.com/stacker. Once we get all of this goodness bottled up, it goes over to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart, who helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to talk about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is the room mother in our Facebook group, The Basement. She also is our social media coordinator, so say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. She and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. For a URL that'll take you right to our Facebook group, by the way, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, saying until next time, spray and neuter your pets.
You sent me yesterday a little piece of inspiration. And today, instead of our normal movie review or something that happened to us, let's just show everybody, OG, what inspired you enough to make you share it with me. This is Gary Vaynerchuk talking about back to school.
That's my advice for when you go back to school. Say hello to everybody. It might be tough at a young age. You may not be extroverted. It might feel weird to say hello, but like as much as you can like muster up literally hi, I believe in it the most. Probably my favorite talk I've given in the last couple years was to the USC football team where I tell them, I'm like, 99% of you, this is the highlight of your life. Everything after not making the NFL is gonna be downhill and you're walking into these f-ing classrooms and you think you're too f-ing cool and you're putting your Beats by Dre on and your f-ing hoodie and not looking anybody in the eye and think you're somebody and your life's gonna suck f-ing for the next 50 years because you didn't say hello to the kid sitting next to you who went on to f-ing run Disney. People just don't understand how life actually works. It's going to only be about the people.
Be nice to people.
Amen, brother.
Be nice.
Do we have anything to say after that? Done. Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode, but one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot is you got to have good partners on your team, Stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project, maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.